Thank you for listening to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. This is Real Sports Talk for the Real Sports Fan. And I definitely appreciate all you Real Sports fans who are listening right now. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do me a huge favor and leave this podcast a 5-star rating. That 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that 5-star rating will definitely be appreciated. If you're listening on any other platform, that could be iHeartRadio, Podomatic, wherever, please share it from that platform with your friends and family so they can see the podcast, listen to the podcast, love the podcast, subscribe, and then share it with their friends and family. I'm trying to get this podcast to the highest levels of podcast divvy, and I need your help to get there. So I'm sorry that this podcast is coming a few days late. Things have been kind of crazy, you know, dealing with adult stuff. So now we're coming to you on a Thursday. But it seems like it worked out perfectly because I've been listening to this podcast called Class of 88. Hosted by Will Smith, is about hip-hop in the year 1988. All of the different artists who came out that year. It was a huge year for hip-hop. And it talks about their stories and the different connections they have to each other. It's really dope. If you are a fan of hip-hop and hip-hop history, you should definitely check it out. And if you're wondering why Will Smith is hosting this podcast, is because DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince were also a big part of that class. And because of that, I was going to call this episode Party Like It's 1988. And the songs that are going to be played in between the segments are going to be from that year. And then today, the news came out that Mike Tyson is going to be involved in the main event of a big-time boxing promotion on a huge network, a huge platform. And it's like, yo, maybe we really are back in 1988. How is this happening? So if you haven't heard, Jake Paul will be taking on Mike Tyson live on Netflix at AT&T Stadium on July 20th. Now, there's so many directions in which I can go with this. I do think it's truly a bad idea. I can understand the benefits of it, but I think it's a horrible, horrible event. So let's start from the perspective of Netflix. So Netflix, everybody has it, right? Everybody either is paying for Netflix, or you're the friend or family member of somebody else who's paying for it, who allows you to use their password, right? And I understand that there's new rules now where the use of sharing password isn't as open as it once was. But everybody has in their house. Like, Netflix has reached a point where it's even bigger than network television back in the day. So remember back in the day when maybe you couldn't afford cable, but everybody had ABC. Everybody had CBS. Everybody had NBC. That's why shows like The Cosby Show, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, that were on NBC were so huge back then, because that's what you had to watch. If, you know, Fox kind of fell into that category, and that's why shows like Martin and Living Single and all those blew up, because they were on those main networks like that. Netflix has become even bigger than those networks back then, because Netflix isn't only big here in America, it's global. And when you look at the poster for Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson, it says a live global sports event. Very true. This is going to be in every household pretty much around the world. Huge. But I feel like Netflix is missing the opportunity here, and they're being short-sighted. So in the short term, great business move, right? Because you have Jake Paul, who's very popular, who has proven himself to be a ticket seller and needle mover. Mike Tyson has been a ticket seller and needle mover for damn near 40 years now. So I get it from that perspective. But as far as the fight itself is a joke, you have Jake Paul, who has only defeated basketball players, YouTubers, washed up MMA fighters, are due to portray themselves to be boxers, but he hasn't beat any legit boxers. The only person he fought with any boxing resume was his little brother. Got his name already. Shows you how much I cared about that fight. But it was Tyson Fury's little brother, Tommy Fury. Thank you. My brain finally came back to me there. He fought his little brother and he lost. The only person with any type of boxing resume that he fought, he lost. But somehow he's turned beating up basketball players, MMA fighters, and other non-real boxers into him being the guy who's going to represent boxing on his first event on Netflix. How did boxing allow this to happen? Boxing probably has had so many opportunities. I wonder if PBC, Premier Boxing Champions, went to Netflix when they were searching for their new home after Showtime says no longer hosting boxing. Because Amazon definitely is a great opportunity. We haven't seen how it's going to look yet. Their first event's coming up later this month. But I feel like PBC on Netflix was a huge opportunity. And the reason I say that Netflix is being short-sighted is that they're looking at this as just a one-time thing where they can show other sports that they can do this. Right? They're trying to get their foot in the door as far as with sports. They've already had the big-time tennis match, I believe, last week with Rafael Nadal. And now they're going to have this event. And they're trying to show big time sports that they can do it. So this could impress soccer leagues internationally, which would be huge for Netflix to have soccer on from an international standpoint. It can impress maybe the NBA and NFL, which of course is the big fish. The NFL, for any type of platform that wants sports, the NFL is the big fish that you want. So they're trying to impress those sports. But boxing, still, even though it's not what it was in Mike Tyson's heyday in America, internationally and with the niche fans here in America, would be huge on Netflix. Huge. It would be amazing on Netflix. If you had, let's say, Tyson Fury versus Oleksandr Usyk on Netflix with a good undercard, takes off. Takes off, and people are looking for the next boxing event on Netflix after that. But to have Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson, and we don't know what the undercard is yet, but my guess would be there's going to be other celebrities and other BS fights. So to have Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson as the introduction of boxing on Netflix to this worldwide audience is a miss. Shout out to my guy Savage from the Three to Hardaway podcast. Dope basketball podcast. You definitely check it out. He retweeted the announcement of Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson and said, boxing's so unserious, but I'll be there. And that's going to be most people's reaction. Like, I'm not going to take this seriously, but I'll watch for the entertainment. So you're going to get a big audience for it. But then it's going to be just a one-off. And no one's going to look for Netflix as far as their boxing content. And maybe Netflix doesn't care because Netflix doesn't need boxing. But it could be a step in the right direction if they took it seriously and had a serious boxing event to them getting other sports. With tennis, they took it seriously and had a real tennis match on, which could help them in the future as far as their relationship with tennis. With boxing, this isn't going to ingratiate the real boxing fans. This is just something that's going to be a one-time event that's going to get people excited for the one time. But then when the event happens, it's going to be an absolute joke. You have Jake Paul, like I mentioned earlier, no serious boxing on his resume, who's 27 years old. Mike Tyson's a legend, right? And the fact that I'm using legend with his name lets you know that he's older. He's 57, y'all. Now, I understand that Mike Tyson is a superhero in some of y'all's eyes because of how great he was early in his career. From the mid to late 80s, Mike Tyson was that dude. He was unstoppable, knocking everybody out. And even after he took a few L's, his name and his aura still stayed with him. I was a huge wrestling fan growing up. And in 1998, This is after he lost to Holyfield a couple of times, after he was no longer that guy. He still was considered the baddest man on the planet from just a pop culture standpoint. When Vince McMahon introduced him, he said, "The baddest man on the planet, Mike Tyson." And he came out. And he was a part of the production and promotion for Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Shawn Michaels. And it was a big thing to have Mike Tyson as a part of it. And it made the event even bigger. So I get the name recognition of Mike Tyson, and I get the name recognition of Jake Paul. But it's just a bad match overall. Now, if Jake Paul, who claims to care about boxing and has shown that somewhat with what he's done with Amanda Serrano in trying to promote her and has done big things for women's boxing, if he really cares about the sport of boxing, he would do something where it's like, okay, I got this relationship with Netflix. They want to do something with me and boxing. Let me host an event, or let me just put my name on something where I'm promoting boxers who are really doing this. Even if you want to be a part of the event, fight a real boxer on the card, but have a main event with real boxers. But you versus Mike Tyson is just a money grab. And I get that money grabs have been a big part of boxing for as long as you can remember, right? But those money grabs, like Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr., or like Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor, or like Muhammad Ali when he fought against that Japanese wrestler in the 70s. Those money grabs didn't have an impact on boxing, or didn't have a chance to impact boxing the way that this can. If this was done correctly, both Netflix and boxing could benefit in a major way. But the way that they're doing it, Netflix is showing that they're taking boxing as a joke by hosting this. And Jake Paul is taking advantage of the fact that boxing isn't run by a committee or run by one person. I've said for years, boxing needs a Roger Goodell, an Adam Silver, someone like that to oversee the sport. But it's the Wild Wild West. So if you have the cachet, you have the numbers, you prove that you can move the needle, you can do this and quote unquote be the face of boxing. Because Jake Paul, by being on Netflix against Mike Tyson, which is going to have millions, if not hundreds of millions of viewers, is indeed putting himself in a position to be the face of boxing. And as boxing fans, that's bad news. That's all bad. It's spreading like wildfire. I just saw before I started the podcast that Conor Benn is in talks to fight Manny Pacquiao. Someone tell these old dudes to stop it. There's no disrespect, because those dudes are legends. Mike Tyson and Manny Pacquiao are both legends. Both greats. Go make your money some other way. You still have a great name that you can use to be a promoter, to make money some other way. But it's dangerous at this point. Now, Manny Pacquiao's not as old as Mike Tyson, but Mike Tyson, this is dangerous. At 57 years old, maybe Jake Paul is going to take it easy. But that's another reason why this fight is bad, because the fact that I have to even think about the fact of Jake Paul trying to take it easy on Mike Tyson because Mike Tyson is so old is another reason not to have this fight. It's like, I'm truly flabbergasted, bewildered. Just, I can't even think of any more words to describe the feeling of just disappointment in what this is and what this could be. And the crazy part is, like my guy Savage said, a lot of people are going to tune in and be like, look at this craziness that boxing has. Look at this crazy little sport over here and what they're doing. I'll tune in, though. It's entertainment. I'll tune in. And then as soon as they tune in, they're going to tune to something else. And the crazy thing is, it's happening during the summer where there's really nothing else going on but baseball. So it's going to have a lot of viewers. And you can use that time to truly put a bright light on boxing, but instead, we have two boxers who are 30 years apart in age. Like, Jake Paul wasn't alive when Mike Tyson fought Evander Holyfield. Wasn't alive. This is... Man. It's just all bad. It's all bad. And hopefully some sense comes out and they change it up. I would love for boxing to be on Netflix. Love it. That would be amazing because of the platform it provides. But you got to use it right. And again, Netflix probably doesn't really care. But if someone there is a boxing fan, someone who does make decisions, they should try to talk to them out of this and be like, yo, we can use this in a different way and really help boxing out and help ourselves out. Because boxing worldwide can bring us more viewers and bring us more subscribers because it is that powerful. So we'll see what happens, man, but I'm just not feeling good about it at all. So we're gonna take our first music break. Like I said earlier, all the songs in this episode will be from the year 1988, hip-hop songs from that year. So enjoy Brand New Funk by DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. On the backside of the break, we're gonna talk a little basketball. Who are the best role players in the NBA who will have a major impact on the playoffs and play-in? You gotta stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
Stunt. It's the raw, untouched, pure, hard brand.
Welcome back to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hopefully you enjoyed that music break. So now let's get into the role players in the NBA who could swing a playoff series or a play-in game. We're going to start with the Eastern Conference. The number one seed right now is the Boston Celtics, who just are dominating the NBA right now. Currently, as we speak, I believe they are seven games. I'm pulling it up now. I believe they're seven games ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks. Yes, they are seven games ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks. So it's going to be very, very hard for them to lose that lead. They're pretty much a lock to be the one seed. And one of the reasons they are a lock to be the one seed is the play of Derek White. Derek White is one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. He can shoot it with the best of them. He's a good decision maker. And he's somebody who could swing a playoff series. This year, he's averaging 15.5 points per game, 4.9 assists per game. Speaking of that decision making, shooting 47% from the field and 40% from three. Boston's going to go into the playoffs as the odds-on favorite to come out of the Eastern Conference. Now, it's not a foregone conclusion because Milwaukee's playing better. Cleveland's been really good, especially when Donovan Mitchell's been healthy. Orlando's been balling out lately. The Knicks, if they ever get healthy, can be very dangerous. And we all know Miami, you can't sleep on them. So in Philadelphia, if Joel Embiid comes back. So the West is crazy, but the East has potential to be really, really dangerous as well. And Boston's going to need their role players to step up in moments where Jason Tatum may have an off game, or Jaylen Brown maybe is having a game where those turnovers creep up on him. And I think Derek White is that role player for them. At the 2 seed, we got the Bucks right now. And I believe that role player for them is Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis so far this year has given you 13.1 points per game, 7.1 rebounds, shooting 50% from the floor and 38% from three. He is so important to his team when he comes off the bench, and he could be somebody who can close depending on what the matchup is. He doesn't have the shot blocking ability of Giannis or Brook Lopez, but has proven himself to be a good defender who knows where to be and when to be there. I think that his mid-range shooting and three-point shooting to help spread the floor could be major in the playoffs against some of these lineups. Against Boston, they play Boston in Eastern Conference Finals. Bobby Portis needs to be a guy who can make Kristaps Porzingis or make Al Horford or whoever's guarding him stay out there to where Damian Lillard and Giannis have driving lanes. Brook Lopez is going to be important for that as well, him hitting threes. Because Boston's defense is so good and they have so much length that if you have a weakness out there, they're going to exploit it. And Bobby Portis can be somebody who makes it very hard for a Boston or a Philly or whoever to exploit that weakness. Cleveland. Cleveland is tricky. I put Evan Mobley down. Now, Evan Mobley, when he got picked in the draft, was projected to be a star one day. And he still may turn into that. He's dealt with injuries this year and missed some time. And during that time, Cleveland took off without him being there. And it seems like they play better when it's either him or Jared Allen on the court. So the reason I picked him as a key player is that he has to take advantage of the moments he's out there. If he's out there without Jared Allen, he has to prove that he can be the rim protector that they need. And also that he can hit a three every now and again. Doesn't have to be Steph Curry out there, but they need him to be at least a threat from there to where he's not being left alone. He's not self-checked. And this year he's giving you 15.9 points per game, 10.3 rebounds, 1.6 blocks per game. His defense has been phenomenal. Shooting 58% from the floor, 32% from three. That has to increase during the playoffs. They need that to increase for Cleveland to have an opportunity. That's one of the reasons they didn't succeed last year against the Knicks. Their offense was so bogged down. Now, they've added three-point shooters, Max Strus, George Niang, and they have changed up their lineups to where they're no longer dealing with that lack of space for big moments in time, right? But you still need Evan Mobley for his defensive prowess and also what he can do offensively if he's shooting that three well. He's a big part of what they want to be as far as their success. At the 4 seed right now, we got the Orlando Magic. And for them, I put Jalen Suggs as that role player. Jalen Suggs this year is averaging 12.3 points per game, 46% from the floor, 39% from three, right? His defense and intensity is so major when it comes to Orlando. When you watch Orlando play, they play with a different type of energy from the start because of him. He's like a Pat Bev, a Jose Alvarado. He's like those players, but he has potential to be better than them. And that's on both ends. So you have to love what he's bringing. I think that he's very important for what Orlando's trying to do this year as far as shocking some people in the Eastern Conference. For the Knicks, I put Josh Hart. Josh Hart is another one of those guys who defensively is always going to bring it. His energy, his rebounding is important. Now, his three-point shooting can be very on and off. He has days where he's not missing, and then days where he can't do nothing but miss. So far this year, he's shooting 32% from three, averaging almost 9 points a game. So his offense isn't the major thing you need from him. His rebounding, defense, and just overall decision-making on the court. Very high basketball IQ guy. He's so important to the Knicks. But that doesn't matter if the Knicks don't get healthy. OG Anunoby has to come back. Julius Randle has to come back. If not, you have to wait till next year to see what the Knicks can truly do. For the next team, we got the Miami Heat. I have their rookie, Jaime Jaquez Jr., as that guy, averaging 12.7 points per game, 3.9 rebounds, shooting 49% from the field. So they played against New Orleans. That was maybe a week or two ago now. And that's the game where the fight broke out. So that's what people remember from it. But I remember Jaime Jaquez being able to do so much. He's so versatile because of his size. And he's strong. So even if he has a really good defender on him, like a Herb Jones, who's one of the best defenders in the league, he can back him down, get to his hook shot. He can shoot the three. He's a decent defender. Shown good basketball IQ. They need him to not shrink in the playoffs. They need him to be a prominent member of the rotation come playoff time if they want to make another run like they did last year. For the next team, got Philadelphia. I have Buddy Hield as that role player for them. This year he's averaging 15, well, with the 76ers so far, he's averaging 15.7 points per game, 5.5 assists, which definitely high for Buddy Hield, shooting 44% from the field and 41% from three. And he has not played with Joel Embiid yet. I imagine with Joel Embiid, he's going to get a lot of open looks, or he's going to create space for Joel Embiid because he cannot be left open. They need him to continue to be that hot shooter that he is, to create that space for Joel, or to take advantage of the wall that they build against Joel Embiid. There's such a mystery right now because they've fallen off so far without Joel Embiid. But if Joel comes back and he's close to being 100%, Philadelphia is definitely a threat, especially if they're playing at like the 6th seed and they're going against a 3 seed. If it's them versus Cleveland, for example, in the first round with a healthy Joel Embiid, you can see an upset happening there. Or the bottom seed winning. It may not be an upset betting-wise. So Buddy Hield has to show up for them. For the Pacers, I have Miles Turner. I understand Miles Turner has been known for a while now. People may not think of him as a role player, but he's the third guy behind Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam. They need Miles Turner to protect the rim, be someone who enforces defense for them because they don't do it from a natural playing standpoint. He's averaging 17.2 points per game, 7.1 rebounds, shooting 52% from the floor. They need him to shoot from three very well. Right, to space that floor for Pascal to drive, for Tyrese to do his thing as far as getting assists and being a drive to the goal. So the Pacers right now, Tyrese Halliburton has been playing so well since the hamstring injury. They need him to show up as well. But they could be a team that just could be a pesty team. Real just pest on somebody's side from the first round. But they need Miles Turner to be at his best to do that. At the 9th seed right now, we have the Chicago Bulls, who could be a team that maybe upset somebody in the play-in. And that could be because of Alex Caruso. Now, of course, Kobe White's been a guy who's emerged for them. Been phenomenal this year. and has made himself a lot of money going forward because of the way he's playing. Alex Caruso is that role player. They need to be just phenomenal. This year, he's averaging 9.6 points per game, shooting 46% from the floor and 38% from three. He needs to be able to shoot more than just wide open threes. He needs to shoot threes when people are closing out at him, when it's not comfortable. He has to make those threes as well, so he can open up space for DeMar DeRozan, for Kobe White to do their thing. So Alex Caruso is very important, especially defensively, what he does there as far as picking up full court, guarding the best guy. He could be somebody who could help them make an improbable run to the playoffs. I don't think they've beaten anybody in the playoffs, but even getting in the playoffs would be a win for Chicago. For the Hawks, it's Jalen Johnson. Oh, Jalen Johnson's really good. He's really good, averaging 15.6 points per game, 8.7 rebounds per game, shooting 51% from the floor, showing himself to be a good defender. Atlanta, they're waiting for Trae Young to get back. I don't see them losing that 10th spot because Brooklyn and Toronto, they seem like they're done. So I think Atlanta's going to stay in that 10th spot and have a chance in the play-in against Chicago. And Jalen Johnson could be a big part of them trying to make the playoffs. So those were my role players who could have a major impact in the Eastern Conference. Going to take a quick break. Let's enjoy some more music from 1988 when we come back to the Western Conference.
JJ Fat and we're here to rock. Rhymes like ours could never be stopped. See, it's three of us and I know we're fresh. Party rockers, non-stoppers, and our names are deaf. See, the J is for just, the other for jamming. The F is for fresh, A-N-D, deaf. Behind the turntables is DJ Train. Mixing and scratching is the name of the game. Now here's a little something about nosy people. It's not real hard, it's plain and simple. Baby D. Supersonic. JJ Fad is devastating. We know you like the girl, so you better get sterile. Cause we are the home chicks that are rocking your world. Supersonic. Supersonic. Supersonic is a word when people start to listen. Especially bigger people, they pay close attention. You might not believe it. You might not even buy it. But when it comes to our lady, might even try it. Supersonic. Supersonic. Now all you supersonic people try to bite a rhyme. You may think that you are deaf, but you're way behind. So you better listen good to what we have to say. Cause when it comes to JJ Fad, you can't get no play. Supersonic.
Yeah.
try to handle me, you should find it too clean. I'm always rocking, never stopping, devastating, regulating. When I'm on the microphone, it's either all these devastating. Figure is a difference in everybody, say I'm different. There's no other angel lover, everybody know I'm covered clientele. I'm a girl, everybody know I'm down.
Welcome back to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hopefully you enjoyed that old school music break. Again, each song from this episode is from the year 1988. So now let's get into the best role players in the Western Conference who could change the trajectory of a series or play-in game. So let's start at the top of the Western Conference. The Minnesota Timberwolves are the number one seed right now at 43-19 as I'm recording on this Thursday afternoon. And they learned some bad news today as it was reported that Karl Anthony Towns has a torn meniscus in his knee and will be out indefinitely. That's horrible, right? We talk about Karl Anthony Towns, phenomenal talent. Phenomenal talent at his size that can shoot the way he can shoot. And you have to close out to him. He gets some amazing drives to the basket because of it. Now, he's also somebody come playoff time who you can't really trust to make the right decision, to not foul in a bad way and to foul a lot, right? But you still need him to win. And now that really puts them in danger in a first round series. Let's say they finish with the 1, 2, or 3 seed and you have to play against either Phoenix, Dallas, maybe the Lakers. Any of those teams could take advantage of that. That's really going to put them in a bad position. But the role player who could help them out is Jaden McDaniels. Jaden McDaniels is a great defender, has been a decent three-point shooter, somebody who can also drive to the basket. This year averaging 10.5 points per game, shooting 50% from the floor and 36% from three. He's very important to what they want to do. Very important. He's somebody who they need to be consistent as a defender because his opportunity to guard maybe the best player on the team, and also offensively he can't be a liability. And especially with Karl-Anthony Towns being out, they're gonna need somebody to step up. And maybe him, maybe Naz Reid, maybe that guy now who steps up in that position. We'll have to wait and see if they want to play Naz Reid alongside Rudy Gobert, or if they want to go in a different direction and not have the two big lineup they've been going with and have been used to. We'll have to wait and see. For OKC, I didn't pick a role player per se. If you're not familiar with OKC, I picked their second best player, Jalen Williams. Now, you may know about SGA. He's an MVP candidate. You may know about Chet Holmgren. He was the leader for Rookie of the Year for the first part of the season until Victor Wembanyama really took off. But Jalen Williams is their second best player. This year, averaging 19.1 points per game, 4.5 assists, shooting 54% from the floor and 44% from three. Dude's really, really good. And he's been somebody who, when you watch their games, he's not scared of the clutch moment. The other night, they're playing against the Suns. They're dominating the Suns most of the game. The Suns come back. They have to go on another run to win the game. Jalen Williams is making big baskets down the stretch, along with SGA. He's really good at driving hard, stopping, and pulling up. Earlier this year, I watched a game where they beat Boston, and he was going straight at Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum's a really good defender. Jalen Williams not scared going straight at him. He needs to continue to do that at an even higher level in the playoffs for them to be a real contender. The other role players who have to step up for them, of course, Josh Giddey has not been good this year. A lot of stuff going on with Josh Giddey off the court. But on the court, he's been disappointing, especially as a three-point shooter. If they want to keep him on the floor and keep him for his playmaking abilities, he has to shoot the three at least at a decent shot, right? Because teams in the playoffs will get disrespectful. They will leave you by yourself out there in a playoff series. Like if you're playing the Clippers, they will put Zubac, the center, on one of your guards if they can't shoot and dare you to shoot with him and make you prove that you can make an open shot. He has to be better than that. But I like Jalen Williams as the player who has to step up, because he can truly swing a series for them. For the Nuggets, who are the third seed right now, Aaron Gordon is that guy. Aaron Gordon was so huge in the playoffs last year. doing what he does as far as just roaming around the basket, being ready for Nikola Jokic's passes. He definitely needs to keep that same energy as far as being the best defender, taking advantage of the cuts around the basket and Nikola Jokic's basketball IQ. But defensively, he has to be that dude that he was last year in the playoffs. He has to be that big, strong dude who can take advantage of mismatches, right? Like, he's somebody who, on defense, is so good at using his size and strength along with lateral movement to defend, and also using that size and strength on the offensive end. If he has a mismatch, he has to be able to take advantage of it. Get down the floor early. Pin his guy down low to where he has position where the defender can't really do much about it. He has to take advantage of those moments. If not, then that's where it can get bad, because he's not a good three-point shooter. This year, he's shooting 29% from the three-point line. If he's not able to take advantage of those matchups and make those cuts and do those things near the basket, then he becomes a liability on offense. And things become a lot more constricted for Denver. For the Clippers, who are the 4th seed right now, they may be able to lock up the 4th seed, but they haven't been playing well lately. Just edged out a win over to Houston last night. And they need Norman Powell to be that guy for them to have a real shot. Norman Powell has been great this year. May win sixth man of the year, giving you 13.6 points per game, shooting 49% from the floor, 45% from three. He's been phenomenal. They need him to continue to do that, to take pressure off of James Harden, take pressure off of Kawhi, take pressure off of Paul George, and be that guy that teams can't account for. It's not that they don't account for him. It's not that they're disrespecting him, but you have three stars that they have to account for, they have to game plan for. It's just hard to also game plan for Norman Powell. So Norman Powell can be that X factor for them. At the 5 seed right now, we have the New Orleans Pelicans. Their X factor, their role player who can truly swing a series for them is Herb Jones. Herb Jones has been phenomenal this year. His defense is A1. He should be first team all defense. Should be first team all defense this year. If the voters don't vote for him all team or first team all defense, what are we doing? He's that impactful on the defensive end. Offensively, driving to the ball or driving to the goal better this year, but the 3-point shot has been absolutely on point. This year he's averaging 11.4 points per game, shooting 51% from the floor, 43% from three. His 3-point shot, the confidence in his 3-point shot is just there. Like, he is a totally different shooter this year compared to last year. And that opens up the floor so much for Brandon Ingram, Zion, JV, and CJ McCollum. And even when he's playing with the bench players, it opens up the floor for the knifing drives of Najee Marshall, for Jose Alvarado to do the little things he does as far as just being crafty inside. Having Herb Jones now being a shooter that you can't leave alone, and then when you close out to him, he's got the ability to drive and finish at the rim now. He's somebody who's his development has been phenomenal, and he can truly swing a series for New Orleans. Right now, at the 6th spot, we have the Phoenix Suns, and that player for them is Grayson Allen. Grayson Allen has been shooting the skin off the ball. Now, earlier this year, when I was covering the Suns, I wrote an article after the big-time trade happened where they were part of that three-team deal that sent Damian Lillard to Milwaukee. Said Grayson Allen will be the hidden gem of this trade. And I definitely have to give myself a little tap on the back for that one, because he truly has been. Dude is shooting the skin off the ball this year, averaging 12.6 points per game. And this is prior, the stats I'm giving to you now are prior to the game before he made 8 straight threes against the Denver Nuggets. Shooting 49% from the field and 46% from three. Again, that's prior to that crazy game he had. That ability to just scorch like that and get hot like that can change a playoff series. It can win you a playoff game that maybe you weren't supposed to win. Let's say there's a game where Devin Booker and Kevin Durant are struggling. They can't hit their mid-range shots. And Grayson Allen goes crazy from three like that. That can win you a game or steal you a game that you were supposed to lose. That can swing a series for you. He's major for them. Bol Bol is another guy who could be major for them in the playoffs as well because of his versatility. They need somebody who they can trust as far as a backup big man. They need to do that. So we're going to see what happens with them. But Grayson Allen is really important for what they want to do as far as going deep into the playoffs. For the next team, we have the Sacramento Kings at the seventh spot. Keegan Murray is really big for them. Understand that Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox are the key to make this team go. Malik Monk is also huge for them off the bench. But Keegan Murray needs to be just consistent for them to really make a playoff run. This year, he's averaging 15.1 points per game, 5.3 rebounds, shooting 46% from the field, 36% from three. They need him to be like a 40% and up three-point shooter in the playoffs to truly get the attention of defenders and not have those guys sagging off to make it harder for De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis to work, Malik Monk to work. So Keegan Murray is really important to them. For the Mavericks, I went with P.J. Washington. P.J. Washington's only been there for a short while. So far, he's scoring 11.6 points per game, 5.2 rebounds, shooting 28% from three. And the thing is, he's supposed to be a big man who can spread the floor for you and give room for Luka Doncic to go to work, give room for Kyrie Irving to go to work. Last year, he shot 34% from three. He has to get back to that. He has to get back to being a threat from there, because if he's not a threat, then he's not providing you what he's supposed to provide. So he has to be that threat from there to give the space that Luka and Kyrie need to work. At the nine spot right now, we got the Golden State Warriors. John Dikembe is that guy for them, right? Kuminga is somebody who, not the best three-point shooter, but definitely can slice to the goal, drive, dunk on whoever, and also has a nice little mid-range game. If he's scoring consistently and being a real option, that opens up so many things for Golden State. So far this year, giving you 15.6 points per game, 4.8 rebounds, while shooting 53% from the field. He has to be that true scoring option for them, because Andrew Wiggins hasn't been that guy for them. Right now, my prayers go out to Andrew Wiggins. Hopefully everything is good with his family. They need Kuminga to be the Andrew Wiggins of 2022. They need him to step into that role and be the second best guy. You can't depend on Draymond to be a second best guy, because he's just offensively inept. So you need somebody else to be that guy. Kuminga could be that guy for them. And at the 10th spot, we got the Lakers. That guy for them is D'Angelo Russell. When Russell is confident and he's shooting and he's making shots and he's rolling, the Lakers are really hard to beat. Really hard to beat. And you can tell their energy is different when he's going. When he's going, he gets hot, and I've seen it. It happened last time they played the Pelicans. He got hot, he got rolling. It was like, yo, can't do anything with them. The problem with D'Angelo Russell is the lack of consistency. He's somebody who needs to find that rhythm on a more consistent basis. And you're not expecting him to go crazy every night, but he has to have, even on an off night, he still has to be that threat to can score the 15 points that you need from him. He's really important this year, averaging 17.8 points per game, 6.2 assists, shooting 46% from the field and 41% from three. They're really good, but they need him to be better if they want to make that improbable run from the play-in to deep in the playoffs. So those are my role players who can impact the playoffs and play-in in the Western Conference. We're going to take our last music break, give you some more of that magic from 1988. When we come back, talk about LeBron James scoring 40,000 points, and what active players have a chance to meet that milestone. We'll be right back.
Too black, too strong. Too black, too strong.
Yo, Chuck, you said he could put the stuff front on us. So now we can do this, cause we always do this. Ha ha, yeah, boy.
Bass, how low can you go? Death row, what a brother know. Once the game back is the incredible. Rhyme animal, the uncannable beast. Public enemy number one, 5-4 set freeze. And I got numb. Can I tell him never really never had a gun? But it's the wax that the Terminator X bun. Now they got me in a cell, cause my records they sell. Cause a brother like me said, well, Farrakhan's a prophet, and I think you wanna listen to what he can say to you. What you wanna do is
my question that black as they call us a black, but we'll see you come later.
Welcome back to The Real Deal with Damian Adams. Hopefully you enjoyed that old school jam that just got finished playing. So now let's talk about LeBron James. So last week LeBron James eclipsed 40,000 points in his NBA regular season career. It's not even including playoff games. Regular season career, he now has 40,067 points total. And a lot of people are saying, man, can anyone even get close to what LeBron James is going to end his career with? Not just now, not just getting to 40,000 points. He's the only member of that club. But who can even get close to his record? Because the thing is, LeBron's still going strong. So let's say LeBron plays 2 years, to be conservative, another 2 years, and he's still pretty productive. He could end up with 44,000 points. 44,000, like, the idea of someone scoring that many points when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's record of 38,387 stood for 40 years is crazy. Now, a lot of people would have said that record would never be broken, or it won't be broken in our lifetime, and they were around to see it. So maybe it'll be foolish of me to say that this record would never be broken in my lifetime. I'm 34. Hopefully I'll live to be 100, right? And see a lot of basketball. But it is hard to picture it. So is there anybody currently in the NBA who has a chance to get to 40,000? Forget breaking LeBron's record because we have no idea where it's going to end. But who could get to the 40,000 club? Because 30,000 is hard enough, because the people in the 30,000 point club are LeBron, Kareem, Karl Malone, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, Dirk Nowitzki, and Wilt Chamberlain. That's it. So you have seven people in the history of basketball who have 30,000 points. So getting there alone is crazy. The current player right now who we know most likely will join the 30,000 point club is Kevin Durant. Probably next season, he'll get into the 30,000 point club. But can he get to 40,000? That's asking a lot. You're asking him to play for another He's 35 right now. To get the 40,000 points, you're asking him to play another 5 years at a high level. And his game does translate well to age, as you can see now, because he's so good at pulling up in the mid-range. He's so good with a three-point jumper. And he'll be able to play and be effective for a long time. But will he be able to stay at this level, especially with his injury history? That's a big thing with LeBron. He's never had any major injuries. What we would consider major, like torn ACL, torn Achilles, broken legs, anything like that. You know, he's had the groin muscle injury. That probably was his biggest injury a few years back. And that ankle or foot injury last year. But was able to still play through it. Kevin Durant's already missed time because of major injuries. And will he be able to avoid those going forward? You're really asking a lot. You're asking a lot of somebody who's already 35 years old. So I don't think he'll get the 40,000. The next player is James Harden. He's already on the downside of his career. He's at 25,000 right now, 25,682. To get to 40,000, he might get to 30,000. And that's even kind of pushing it for James. 40,000, not going to happen. Russell Westbrook's at 25,000, just recently passed that. Remarkable career, definitely not getting to 40,000. He's at the point in his career where he's coming off the bench. He might get you 10 points a game. Steph Curry is the next active player at 23,287. Can he get to 40,000? Nah, he's already at 35 years old. So the thing is, can he continue to play at this level as a small guard? And that's no disrespect to him, but that's tough at 35 years old to ask him to play. To even get to 30,000 is asking a lot from Steph Curry. DeMar DeRozan, he's already a little older at 23,000. He's not going to get there. Chris Paul, we know, is not going to get there. He's at 22,000 right now. Damian Lillard's at 20,000, already 33 years old. Is he going to play till he's 40? Will he still be this good? He's shown some slowdown this year. Don't see it happening. Then you got to wait a little while to get to the next active player. So you got Damian Lillard at 44 with 20,794. The next active player is Giannis at 18,122 at number 78 on the list. It's hard for me to picture Giannis playing at the same level when he's 35, 36 because of the physical style he plays with. So I don't see him getting to 40,000, maybe not even 30,000, because it's going to be hard for his body to maintain with the way he plays. The next active player, Rudy Gay, we know he's not doing it. Paul George is already 34. He's at 17,000 points. Definitely don't see him getting the 30,000 point club, let alone 40,000. Anthony Davis, definitely don't see him playing long enough to do it. Kyrie Irving, nope. Brooke Lopez, he's already towards the end. Kyle Lowry, towards the end. Bradley Beal, asking a lot for him to stay healthy that long. Mike Conley, not going to happen. Drew Holiday, not going to happen. Kevin Love, not going to happen. Klay Thompson, not going to happen, already on the downside. Nikola Vucevic, not going to happen. Jimmy Butler, he don't take the regular season serious enough for it to happen, but he might get to 20,000 if he's lucky. Let me see, who else? Tobias Harris, not going to happen. Devin Booker, now he's at number 185 right now with 14,065. Can he stay healthy enough? Does he want to play that long? That's the big thing with him. He's definitely talented enough to get to 30,000. 40,000, that's asking a lot. Then you got Nikola Jokic at number 207 with 13,610. I don't see him playing long enough. I do think it's overblown that he doesn't love basketball. Obviously, he loves it, but I don't see him playing until he's 40 years old. And he doesn't care about scoring like that. So I don't see him staying around long enough and scoring enough to do that. Karl-Anthony Towns, I don't see him staying around long enough and being healthy enough. Just talked about his injury earlier. And I was looking at the top 250 scorers of all time. And there's no one else who has a chance. Andrew Wiggins at 234. Then you have Gordon Hayward at 246 and Derrick Rose at 247. So now you got to start thinking about younger players who haven't reached this list yet. So the first name that came to mind for me was Luka Doncic, right? So let me pull up Luka's stats real quick. Luka's on an incredible pace. So Luka just turned 25 a few days ago. So he's still young, and he's already scored for his career. Let me get to his total points here. He's already scored total points 10,969 at 25 years old. And that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons in. So can he continue this pace for another 15 years? That's asking a lot. And I was listening to the CJ McCollum podcast. His co-host is Cassidy Hubbard. And Cassidy was talking about how, yeah, he's on pace if he wants to continue to do that. And she talked to Luka, and Luka was like, nah, I'm not playing that long. Like, he's already said, like, no, I have no desire to play into my 40s. So if that's true, now everything changes over time. He may get older and may continue to want to play. But if that's true, then if he wants to retire at, say, 35, he has no shot to do it. But he has the pace right now to do it. What about Victor Wembanyama? He's a rookie, of course. He's a far ways away. But if he has that desire to play that long, and he's somebody who looks like he's ahead of the curve when it comes to taking care of his body and already is set to try to have a long career, but 20-plus years is different. It's just different to try to play that long. Again, a lot of people said that Kareem's net record would never be broken, and it has been. So it's possible, but it may be somebody who's not in the league yet. Because you're asking a lot of Luka to play that long, Victor Wembanyama to play that long. And again, when it comes to even scoring 40,000 points or even being close to breaking LeBron's record, the love you have to have for the game is different. It's different. So shout out to LeBron, man. I don't see anybody breaking it anytime soon, for sure. But I'm going to hold out hope that it happens in my lifetime. Right? And hopefully I live for a very long time and I can see it. Maybe I'll be 100 years old still doing this podcast talking about it. But it's going to be hard to see if somebody can break that. Like, that is just phenomenal. The amount of consistency and greatness that it takes to score 40,000 points is just stupid, man. So hopefully you enjoyed this episode of The Real Deal with Damian Adams. I appreciate everybody who takes the time to listen and time to view my videos and all that good stuff. I truly appreciate it. I definitely want to take this podcast to the highest levels of podcastivity. I need your help to get there. So please share this episode if you're listening to it. Tell your friends about it. I would truly, truly appreciate it. Make sure you follow me on all social media platforms at The Real Deal WDA. That's The Real Deal, W as in whiskey, D as in Delta, A as in Alpha. And until next time, go real or go home.